Welcome back. March 2026 is one of those patch cycles where the raw CVE count matters less than attack path. If you're running an enterprise program, the question is not how many patches landed. It's which ones are already helping an attacker get from a link, a page, or a document to code execution or privilege. And this month, we've got a very clear split between actively exploited browser and mobile issues, and then a set of enterprise flaws that may not all be weaponized publicly, but sit on very large, very sensitive surfaces.
Quite right. Triage has to start with exploitability, then exposure, then asset criticality. In practical terms, internet-facing systems first, then user-facing software that processes untrusted content, then anything that holds elevated privilege or can grant it. Defenders still get trapped by patch volume. 77 Microsoft flaws sounds alarming, but the correct response is not indiscriminate urgency. It is selective urgency.
Yes, and there is a technical reason for this. Some bugs need a lot of conditions, local access, or weird timing. Others are basically one click, or even just previewing content. The Chrome issues this month are remote, low complexity, malicious page, done. The Apple chain also starts with web content, so these are near the top, because the delivery is cheap for the attacker. Compare this with, say, a publicly disclosed enterprise bug that still needs authenticated access or a special deployment pattern. Important, yes, but not necessarily first at 9 a.m.
And from the user exposure side, that's exactly the difference. Browsers, phones, mail clients, office preview paths, those are where staff live all day. An exploit doesn't need to smash through a hardened perimeter if it can just meet the user in their normal workflow. That's why I think security teams sometimes underrate ordinary software. It's ordinary for users, but it's premium attack surface for everyone else.
There is also the matter of blast radius. A browser flaw on a lightly used kiosk is one thing. The same flaw on executive laptops, privileged admin workstations, or developer endpoints is quite another. Similarly, a SQL Server privilege escalation on a peripheral lab system differs materially from one on a production data platform. Asset criticality alters patch priority, even when the CVE headline looks identical.
I would maybe phrase it as three buckets. First, active exploitation plus remote delivery, patch now. Second, privilege-bearing enterprise platforms with credible abuse value. Patch next with change control, but fast. Third, everything else in the normal cadence, unless your environment makes it more exposed. This is where exposure management matters more than static inventory. Knowing you have 10,000 endpoints is less useful than knowing which of them run vulnerable Chrome, which cannot reboot, which are on old iOS, which handle email attachments, which have local admin, and which are externally reachable.
Yeah, and one more thing on terminology because it affects triage meetings. Publicly disclosed does not automatically mean drop everything, and zero day gets used a bit loosely depending on vendor language. But active exploitation should end the debate. If users can be hit by visiting a page, or if a malicious document can bypass expected warnings, you don't wait for perfect certainty. You reduce reachable attack paths first.
So the March framing is simple enough. Prioritize components that accept untrusted content, components directly exposed to the internet, and components that confer privilege. That gives you a rational order before you drown in patch notes.
Let's go deeper on the browser side. Google released an out-of-band Chrome update for two high-severity 0 days. CVE 2026-3909 and CVE 2026-3910. The first is an out-of-bounds write in Skia, the 2D graphics library. The second is an inappropriate implementation flaw in V8, the JavaScript and WebAssembly engine. In both cases, remote exploitation is possible by getting a user onto a malicious page, and the attack complexity is low. This is why browsers are always such a hot zone. The vulnerable components sit directly between hostile web content and the local system.
And from an operations perspective, Low complexity plus malicious website means your normal user behavior is enough. Email link, social post, ad, compromise site, watering hole, take your pick. Users don't need to download some sketchy binary. They just browse. That's a nasty patching problem because people think the browser auto-updated. But if they haven't restarted it, protection can lag.
Exactly. People confuse download with deployment. The source even points out updates can lag if users rarely close the browser or something interferes. So restart compliance is not boring hygiene here, it is exploit mitigation. If your fleet is on Chrome 146.0.7680.75 or later, fine. If the update package is sitting there, but the browser process is still old, you are not fine.
This is why mature programs measure version adoption and restart completion separately. Not merely patch offered, but patched binary loaded in memory. Enterprises should have deadlines for browser restart enforcement, particularly when an out-of-band update addresses active exploitation.
The Apple side is similar in outcome but more interesting as a chain. Google warned about the Karuna exploit kit targeting iPhones from iOS 13.0 up to 17.2.1. It uses WebKit bugs, CVE-2023-43000 and CVE-2024-23222, to trigger through malicious web content, then abuses a kernel bug, CVE-2023-41974, to gain kernel privileges. So it starts in the browser engine and then escalates. That's the key pattern. Initial remote code path plus privilege escalation.
And the campaign history matters. First, highly targeted. Then, watering holes, aimed at Ukrainian users by a suspected Russian espionage group. And later on, many fake Chinese financial websites. So you see the usual evolution, from selective operations to broader criminal reuse. That tells defenders an exploit chain can migrate down market very quickly once it proves reliable.
Apple's recent significance here is that it issued patches for older devices that can no longer move to the latest iOS. That is strategically important for enterprise fleets. Legacy mobile devices are often tolerated because they still function. But if they remain on exposed versions and continue to browse untrusted content, they become durable risk reservoirs.
So the guidance is pretty concrete. For browsers, emergency patch, then verify restart, then verify actual version. For mobile fleets, identify devices in the vulnerable iOS ranges, push updates. And if a device can't reach a supported secure state, treat it like legacy infrastructure. Restrict access, maybe isolate sensitive apps, maybe retire it. Still Works is not a security standard.
And do not forget other Chromium-based browsers. The source says similar updates should follow soon. If your enterprise has Edge, Brave, whatever, you need dependency awareness. Same engine family, same pressure.
Turning to Microsoft, March brings at least 77 fixes. And again, the sensible approach is not counting, but ranking. One standout is CVE-2026-21262 on SQL Server 2016 and later, an elevation of privilege vulnerability that allows an authorized attacker to elevate to sysadmin over a network. That should get immediate attention in any environment with exposed SQL paths, shared environments, or lower trust users and services touching database tiers.
Yes. People hear authorized attacker and relax too much. I would not. If low privileges on a reachable SQL server can become sysadmin over network, that's a very useful post-compromise move. It turns limited foothold into control of data, jobs, linked systems, maybe backups depending on design. In real intrusions, EOP on the data layer is often where containment starts to break.
And it pairs very badly with phishing. That's the recurring theme this month. Initial access can come from mail, browser, or document, and then the attacker looks for the next rung up. Microsoft Office is especially awkward because March includes CVE-2026-26113 and CVE-2026-26110. Remote code execution bugs that can trigger by viewing a booby-trapped message in the preview pane. That's rough, because the user doesn't even need to fully engage the content in the usual way.
Quite. Preview paths are dangerous because they collapse what users think of as a trust boundary. I only looked at it is not a defense if rendering itself is enough. The same lesson appears in the separate word case, CVE-2026-21514, an OLE and mark of the web bypass. According to the source summary, malicious Word documents could execute payloads silently once opened, without protected view warnings or enable content notices. If true in a given environment, that is not merely a bug, it is a failure of expected friction.
This is why document controls are not magic. When OLE and MOTW protections are bypassed, the user-facing warning stack stops being reliable. Then, email delivery plus document open becomes much more valuable to an actor. The Tenable summary also ties this to active exploitation before disclosure and to Iranian state-sponsored use in phishing campaigns. So even if you debate labels like end day or zero day, the operational point is the same. If threat actors already know how to use it, you patch and you add controls around documents.
And on the broader Microsoft picture, more than half the Patch Tuesday CVEs were privilege escalation. That sounds repetitive, but it's actually the multiplier category. A phishing email by itself may get a user context foothold. A browser exploit may land in a sandbox. A document may run with limited rights. EOP bugs are what turn that into persistence. Credential theft opportunities, lateral movement, system, sysadmin, all the ugly stuff.
So enterprise order of work is fairly direct. Office and mail rendering paths near the front because they are user-facing. SQL Server quickly behind or ahead if business critical and reachable. Then the exploitation more likely, privilege escalations across Windows components where they materially strengthen common intrusion chains. One must patch in the order an adversary would think.
There is one more useful March lesson from CertCC. Malformed zip metadata can create false negatives in antivirus and EDR archive scanning. The issue is that scanners may rely on zip header metadata, like compression method, to decide how to pre-process content. If an attacker tampers with that field, the product may fail to decompress and therefore fail to inspect the real payload. A custom loader can then recover embedded data directly while ignoring the declared method.
Important nuance, though. Standard extraction tools often fail as well, with CRC or unsupported method errors, and the payload still requires follow-on recovery or execution. So this is not zip equals instant compromise. It is a detection gap, not a fully autonomous kill chain.
Right, but it's still very relevant for operations because teams love saying, the gateway scanned it or EDR inspected the archive. Maybe. Maybe not completely. If malformed metadata can disrupt inspection, then attachment filtering, detonation, user isolation, and downstream execution controls all matter more. You can't let one green check from AV become the trust decision.
I would stack the compensating controls like this. First, email filtering and web filtering to reduce delivery. Second, attack surface reduction rules and document controls to block common execution paths. Third, application isolation for browsing and risky content handling where possible. Fourth, endpoint telemetry, looking for suspicious child processes, OLE object behavior, or unusual archive handling. And fifth, patching, because controls degrade when trust boundaries collapse.
Add rollback planning as well. Fast patching without recovery discipline is simply fast chaos. For critical systems, you need tested deployment rings, known good rollback procedures, and validation metrics. Not just patch applied, but service healthy, restart completed, business workflow intact, vulnerability exposure reduced. Enterprises often neglect that last one. Remediation is not a ticket closure event. It is a risk reduction event.
My practical model is pretty simple. Start with asset inventory, but enrich it. Internet-facing or not, user-facing or not, privileged or not, business-critical or not, managed restart status, and whether exploit activity is known. Then score patches by four things: active exploitation, reachable attack surface, privilege impact, and business importance of the affected asset. That's how you avoid spending all day on a noisy, low-value server, while browsers and phones stay exposed.
Yes, and measure actual outcomes. Percentage of exposed assets patched. Median time to restart for browsers. Legacy mobile devices still in vulnerable ranges. SQL and Office coverage, and exceptions that remain. If you cannot see the exceptions, you do not have a patch program. You have hope.
And hope has never been a control. March 2026 is a very good reminder that exploit chains are assembled from ordinary components: browser, phone, document, privilege escalation, management console, archive handling. Defenders should respond with equally ordinary discipline, only done well.
That's a good place to leave it. Tight prioritization, real restart compliance, and no blind trust in one control layer.
Absolutely. Patch the paths attackers actually use first.
Thanks for listening. We'll speak again soon. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
See you next time.